Well, we have two shortened stories for you today. The title in the bulletin isn't complete. The story I'm going to read first is called this, If You're Missing Baby Jesus, Call 878-7162. It's a story by Jean Geitzen. And I think Jean Geitzen is a woman, as she could be a French-Canadian or even a French person by Jean Geitzen, but I think she's Jean Geitzen. I couldn't find out very much about the author, but in this short story, which is, I've seen it published as a book before, a very small book, it captures the true meaning of Christmas, I think, for all of us. And I think as we put these stories to bed, I think you will really enjoy it. If you're missing baby Jesus, call 878-7162. When I was a child, my father worked for an oil company in North Dakota. The company moved him around to different parts of the state. And at some point between one move and another, we lost our family nativity set. Shortly before Christmas in 1943, my mother decided that she would replace it and was happy to find another at our local Five and Dime for only $3.99. You can tell this story was written some time ago. But when my brother Tom and I helped her unpack the set, we discovered that there were two of the figure baby Jesus. Someone must have packaged this wrong, my mother said, counting out the figures. We have one Joseph and one Mary, three wise men, three shepherds, two lambs, a donkey, a cow, and an angel, and two babies. Oh dear, I suppose some set down at the store is missing baby Jesus. Hey, that's great, Mom, my brother and I shouted. Now we have twins. You two run back down to the store and tell the manager that we have an extra Jesus. Tell him to put a sign on the remaining boxes saying that if a set is missing baby Jesus, they should call 878-7162, my mother instructed. I'll give each of you a penny for some candy. And don't forget your mufflers. It's freezing cold out there. The man at the store copied down my mother's message, and the next time we were in the store, we saw the cardboard sign that read, If you're missing baby Jesus, call 878-7162. All week long, we waited for the call to come. Surely, we thought, someone was missing that important figurine. And each time the phone rang, my mother would say, I'll bet that's about Jesus. But it never was. My father tried to explain that the figurine could be missing from a set up in Walla Walla, Washington, and that packing errors occurred all the time. He suggested we just put the extra Jesus back in the box and forget about it. Back in the box, I wailed. What a terrible thing to do to baby Jesus, and at Christmas, too. Surely someone will call, my mother said. We'll just keep them together in the manger until someone calls. And when no one had called by 5 o'clock on Christmas Eve, my mother insisted that my father just run down to the store to see if there were any sets left. You can see them right through the window over there on the counter, she said. If they're all gone, then I'll know that someone is bound to call tonight. Run down to the store, my father thundered. It's 15 degrees below zero out there. Oh, Daddy, we'll go with you, I said. Tommy and I will bundle up real good, and we can look at all the decorations on the way. My father gave a long sigh and headed for the front door. I can't believe I'm doing this, he muttered. Each time the phone rings, everyone yells for me to see if it's about Jesus. And now I'm going off on the coldest night of the year to peek in a window to see if he's there or not there. My father muttered all the way down the block, while my brother and I raced each other up to the window where the lights flickered on and off around the frame. "They're all gone, Daddy," I shouted. "Every set must be sold." "Hooray, hooray," my brother joined in, catching up with me. "The mystery will be solved tonight." My father, who had remained several steps behind us, simply turned on his heel and headed back home. Inside the house once more, we saw that the extra figurine had vanished. It had vanished from the set, and my mother appeared to have vanished too. "Someone must have called, and she went out to deliver the figurine," my father reasoned, pulling off his boots. "You kids get busy stringing popcorn strands for the tree, and I'll go upstairs and wrap your mother's present. We had almost completed one strand when the phone rang. My father yelled for me to answer. "Tell him we found a home for Jesus," he called down the steps. But the caller was not an inquirer. It was my mother, with instructions for us to come to 205 Chestnut Street immediately and to bring 3 blankets, a box of cookies, and some milk. "Now what has she gotten us into?" my father groaned as we bundled up once again. 205 Chestnut Street? Why, that's got to be 8 blocks away. Wrap that milk up good in the blankets or it'll turn to ice by the time we get there. Why in the name of heaven can't we just get on with Christmas? It's probably 20 degrees below out there now, and the wind is picking up. Of all the crazy things to do on a night like this. Tommy and I sang Christmas songs at the top of our lungs all the way to Chestnut Street. My father, carrying his bundle of blankets and milk, looked for all the world like St. Nicholas himself, with his arms full of goodies. Every now and then, my brother would call back to him, "Hey, Dad, let's pretend we're looking for a place to stay, just like Joseph and Mary." "Yeah, sure. Let's pretend we're already in Bethlehem, where it's probably 65 degrees in the shade right now," my father would answer. The house at 205 Chestnut Street turned out to be the darkest one on the block. One tiny light burned in the living room, and the moment we set foot on the porch steps, my mother opened the door and shouted, "They're here! They're here!" "Oh, thank God you got here, Ray. You kids take those blankets into the living room and wrap up those little ones on the couch. I'll take the milk and cookies." "Would you mind telling me what's going on, Ethel?" my father asked. "We have just walked through below zero weather with the wind in our faces the whole way." "Never mind that now," my mother interrupted. "There's no heat in this house, and this young mother is so upset she doesn't know what to do. Her husband walked out on her, and those poor children will have to spend a very bleak Christmas. So don't you start complaining. I told her you could fix that oil furnace in a jiffy." My mother strode off to the kitchen to warm the milk while my brother and I wrapped up the 5 little children who were huddled together on the couch. The children's mother explained to my father that her husband had run off, taking bedding, clothing, and almost every piece of furniture, but she had been doing all right until the furnace broke down. "I've been doing washing and ironing for people and cleaning the 5 and dime," she said. "And I saw your number every day there. It was on those boxes on the counter. And when the furnace went out, that number kept going through my mind. 878-7162. 878-7162. Said on the box that if a person was missing Jesus, they should call you. That's how I knew you were good Christian people, willing to help folks. I figured that maybe you would help me too. So I stopped at the grocery store tonight and I called your missus. Now, I'm not missing Jesus, mister, because I sure love the Lord, but I am missing some heat. Me and the kids ain't got no bedding, no warm clothes. I got a few Christmas toys for them, but I got no money to fix that furnace." "Okay, okay," my father said kindly. "You've come to the right place. Now let's see. You've got a little oil burner over there in the dining room. Shouldn't be too hard to fix, probably just a clogged flue. I'll look it over and see what it needs. My mother came into the living room carrying a plate of cookies and a tray of warm milk. As she set the cups down on the coffee table, it was the only sign of the Christmas season in the whole house. The children stared wide-eyed with wonder at the plate of cookies that my mother set before them. One of the littlest ones woke up and crawled out from under the blanket. Seeing all the strangers in the house, he began to cry, and my mother swooped him up in her arms and began to sing to him. This is Christ the King, whom shepherds guard and angels sing. She crooned while a child wailed, haste, haste to bring him, Lord, the babe, the son of Mary. I hope Mother was a better singer than that. But she sang oblivious to the child's cries. She sang and danced the baby around the room until at last he settled down again. You hear that, Chester? The young mother said to another child. That woman singing about the Lord Jesus, and he ain't ever going to leave or walk out on us. Why, he sent these people just to fix our furnace. And blankets we got now, too. Oh, we're going to be warm tonight, kiddos. My father, finishing his work on the oil burner, wiped his hands on his muffler, and he said, I've got it going, but you need more oil. I'll make a few calls tonight when I get home, and we'll get you some oil. Yes, sir, you came to the right place, he grinned. When my father calculated that the furnace was going strong once more, our family bundled up and made our way home. My father didn't say a thing about the cold weather and had barely set foot inside the front door when he was on the telephone. Ed, hey, how are you, Ed? I heard him say. Yes, Merry Christmas to you, too. Say, Ed, we have kind of an unusual situation over here, and I know you've got that pickup truck. I wonder if we could round up some of the boys and find a Christmas tree, you know, and a couple of things for... The rest of his conversation was lost in a blur of words as my brother and I ran to our rooms and began pulling clothes out of our closets and toys off of our shelves. My mother checked through our belongings for sizes and games, and she said, might do, and added some of her own sweaters and slacks to our stack. We were up way past our bedtime that night, wrapping our gifts. The men my father had called found oil for the furnace, bedding, two chairs, three lamps, and had made two trips to 205 Chestnut before that night was done. Our gifts were piled into the truck on the second trip, and even though it must have been 30 degrees below zero by then, my father let us ride along in the back of the truck. No one ever did call about that missing baby Jesus, the one in the nativity set. But as I have grown older, I realize it wasn't a packing mistake after all. I'm going to read this one from the pulpit. This story is even shorter, but this is something that I put together a couple of weeks ago. And it really takes us into January, this time of year when the holidays seem to sneak past us, and all of a sudden it's time to put all the decorations away. I was busily and contentedly packing up Christmas decorations one gray morning when I suddenly realized with a sense of urgency that I forgot to pack away Jesus. I looked down and there was the manger and baby from our nativity set, and suddenly my mind began to go down an unexpected road. You see, my wife was suffering from a cancer, and this would normally have been something that she would have taken care of. We were waiting for her to have a bone marrow transplant sometime in January, and Christmas hadn't been something that we had really been looking forward to this year. Christmas is a time when people expect that because I am a Christian, perhaps even more so that I'm a Christian pastor, I'm more focused on Jesus. In some ways, that's true. Jesus gets a lot of public exposure at Christmas time. I sing about Jesus, send cards about Jesus, read stories about Jesus, and I give gifts in his name. December, however, is also a month full of distractions and is not for me conducive to quiet reflection on all that Jesus brings to my life. The Christmas season, especially this Christmas season, means I spend a lot of time cleaning house and shopping and rehearsing for church services, helping to channel my grandchildren's excited anticipation, and visiting with friends and family. And then along comes January. It's actually January that draws my thinking back to Jesus. That icy month hits like a cold north wind and blows out all the sparkling Christmas lights. The media return to covering their daily dose of murder and mayhem after only a few days focused on good people. Marriages that struggled to survive the holidays begin to stall once again and then falter. Volunteers dwindle at the shelters. Debt piles up. And we all know that the tax man is coming for his due, and we feel wanting. Even the exercise of making new resolutions is tinged with futility as we recall the past failures of our own resolve. I look out my window and see a dismal, bare-treed winter day, and words from the Bible come to mind. He had no beauty or majesty to attract us to him, nothing in his appearance that we should desire him. He was despised and rejected by men, a man of sorrows and acquainted with grief. You see, it's during this letdown of the season, with the long cold nights of January, the arrival of bills, and the separation from friends and family, that my thoughts are truly drawn to Jesus. This is the time when I can best celebrate his coming, because I so clearly see our need for his divine intervention. We've mustered all the goodness that we can in our own strength for the holidays, and now we're simply spent. When January arrives, we need an advocate who is a man of sorrows and acquainted with grief. He comes for Christmas like Santa Claus, but Jesus promises not to return to the North Pole when the holiday is over. He stays for the dead of January, sharing the weight of winter. So with renewed faith, I decided this year not to pack baby Jesus away with the rest of the Christmas things. I've decided to keep him close throughout the whole new year. When I was writing that story, I had really not anticipated the very generous gift that you would give to us a week ago, just as we closed up that service. And there's some truth in this story that the money that you gave us and the money that we got from Tesco, well, we put that together and we've already spent it. But the thing is, we put it on a plastic card and we haven't received the bills. And it's actually more money than we had from both churches. I don't know how that worked out. But I want to just say thank you very, very much for your generosity towards us. It was pretty heartwarming to receive that. And as we look forward to this new year coming up, I think we want to take some time in this first weeks of January and really decide who we want to be as a church in 2019. I think it's so important that we commit ourselves and dedicate ourselves. I see in the bulletin today there's a constant need for prayer to bring new families. And here is one such new family that's come into our church. But in 2019, if we can attract even more people into this congregation, then what we are doing is giving ourselves a vital look at where we want to be this time a year from now. If we have just two or three new families that are attending church here regularly, then we can see that there really is a future for this congregation going on. As we look at where we might be if those families never arrive, then I think we have to seriously understand that this church is very limited in its longevity. It's very limited in what it can do in this community. And we have tried over the years to instill in each of us that great desire to reach out. And we always want to say, oh, we've done that before. We've tried this in the past, and it never seemed to work. But maybe there's something new that we can do as we go forward, as we go into 2019, beginning next week, and we realize that indeed there is a new and an exciting future for this small congregation.